Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Alrighty, everyone, welcome to the Barca Blaugranas podcast. My name is Josh. I'm joined once again by Emil Avanesian of Hardwood Hype. Emil, how are we doing?
Josh, what's up, man? How are you? I'm good.
Thank you. All right, so I'm recording this in full transparency about a week before you guys are hearing this. I am on vacation, so we're gonna kind of talk about, you know, bigger picture Barcelona things. So if the world goes on fire and they actually fire Quique Setién, then you know, we'll chat about this next week or something. So Emil, just kind of recapping Barcelona's domestic season, like what has it taught you about the, when I say Barcelona, like what has this season impacted the word FC Barcelona when you think about it? How has it changed how you think about the club and everything about it?
I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's on the one hand, it's like cliche, but from what I can gather and from what I've read, it's the sort of thing that Barcelona fans have been sort of saying in one way or another since, you know, I guess since Cruyff, is that, I don't know, like the ethos and the pillars of the club, that everything that sort of the marketing and PR department and sort of everyone purport that the club is about seems to be sort of kind of very far off in the distance. And, you know, I think it's, you know, we talked about it in various ways, kind of the other times I've been on the podcast, and that the whole thing feels kind of rudderless, and it's, and I mean, it starts sort of at board level. And, you know, I mean, I think the notion that, that there's some sort of quick fix. And you know, this is a thought that I was actually having with regard to Barcelona and Real Madrid, is that, you know, I read an article, I think it was at The Athletic recently, but it was about sort of how the pillars of each, the backbone of each team is getting older. So with Barcelona, you have Messi, Piqué, Suarez, and Busquets, most prominently. And at Real Madrid, you have, you know, sorry, you have Ramos. Benzema's slowly getting up there, and, you know, I mean, Bale's out of favor, but he's going to have to go. And, you know, and they were talking about kind of these aging cores. And I was thinking about the reason I think the Madrid sort of project, or whatever you want to call it, is more successful these days, is that they, at the very least, kind of put together a team with the notion of cohesively putting together a team that's going to have to play a season. You know, like, irrespective of what happens, whether you find the next Ronaldo or Ramos or whatever, like, you're going to have to play these 50, 60 games, and you're going to have to do what you're going to have to do. Barcelona, I feel like, is so kind of haunted by the grandeur of, you know, the greatest club side ever from 10, 12 years ago, and sort of this, I don't know, unrelenting need to sort of be Barcelona, be the whole, like, Mission club, and, like this whole thing. Like, I feel like the board, who, I mean, objectively, have just done a horrible job, but they're constantly, they do nothing but fumble for sort of a silver bullet solution. You know, I mean, it's, I mean, it's sort of doubling down on losses, And, you know, I mean, they want nothing more than to kind of build the next great Barcelona team, but to do it with sort of with one or two sort of, quote, inspired moves rather than actually any kind of infrastructure, which is how the whole thing was built to begin with.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense, but I guess the word I would use is rudderless.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about perhaps why it's rudderless a bit later on. But what are your thoughts on Quique Setién at this point? So at the time of recording this on July 23rd, you know, the featured article at BarcaBlaugranas.com is by a great article by Jason Pettigrew talking about if a Champions League title could save Setién at Barcelona. The conversations and rumors are happening about Laurent Blanc coming to, which is just hilarious to me. The continual recycling of who is the manager who can find this magic solution and potion to fix Barcelona. Like, what are your thoughts on Setién at this point? In my opinion, frankly, like he was kind of given a raw deal, and especially given everything around COVID, like this was a special 6 months. This wasn't your usual, you know, 6 months as manager, like let's evaluate. And even 6 months in a normal cycle is a little, a little short term, especially with Messi's Barcelona. So I think clearly he's, you know, he deserves an off season, even though this off season is going to be particularly short. And I think he needs some more time next season, but like, what are your thoughts on Setién at this point? Is it still too early to evaluate him as, you know, a good or, you know, bad Barcelona manager?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I basically almost entirely agree with you. I mean, I think he was, I mean, even if you take the COVID part out of it, which I realize is a completely insane thing to say, but even if you take out the massive gap in the middle of the season, to somehow sort of be parachuted in to a first place Barcelona team after Ernesto Valverde was let go in the middle of the season, I mean, that in and of itself, almost like whoever you drop into that spot is, you know, it would probably be one of the most difficult tasks of their career. And look, whether there's, it's entirely possible that Quique Setién is not sort of up to being the manager or the coach of Barcelona. And I don't mean that sort of, you know, in terms of aptitude or tactically or anything. Like the guy's a fine coach. You know what I mean? I mean, I think he's with the right sort of collection of talent, he's, you know, he's been a good coach. There's no reason to believe that he couldn't be otherwise. Now, I mean, I think there's the other stuff as far as sort of the management of egos and personalities and sort of the almost being this liaison between the board and the dressing room, especially in a time where it's so just kind of such an insane period and just so much, you know, so much conflict between those two entities. There's another presidential election coming up next year. And then on top of that, the media scrutiny is just bananas, you know? And so maybe all of that stuff sort of in totality is beyond him. But I agree with you that he was just put into such a ridiculous situation. And yeah, the team really underperformed. But that being said, I mean, I think I don't know that they were sort of in... they weren't really world beaters despite being in first place prior to that. And yeah, I mean, I do think he's deserving of at least, I don't know, at least sort of a couple of months, you know, 2-3 months to start next season to see if he has kind of an off season with the club and just sort of, you know, gets his feet on the ground a little bit more and see what he's capable of then.
Yeah, and so like, how do you view Barcelona's chances in the Champions League? Obviously, there's going to be a little bit of a break here, some time to collect themselves after losing La Liga in pretty not hilarious is the wrong word, but like somewhat predictable fashion. Do you feel like, because I mean, personally, I feel like they're going to beat Napoli. Napoli's playing pretty bad right now. Their manager was quoted again that, you know, I'm recording this a week earlier as saying, you know, they don't have a chance of tickling Barcelona, nevertheless hurting them with their current form. But After that, they're probably going to go up against Bayern Munich. And after that, they would probably go against Manchester City. And so, like, the road, they got the more difficult side of the Champions League draw for sure. How do you view their chances heading into the Champions League?
Totally. And I mean, I think the thing is, too, that as you say, you know, Bayern Munich and Manchester City, and, you know, that assumes that Manchester City don't lose to Real Madrid. Or what is it? Lyon has a 1-0 lead over Juventus. So I mean, it's nothing but sort of heavy hitters on that side of the bracket. Yes, I mean that's going to be a problem. I'm increasingly convinced that, especially with the rest, I think the rest will do Barca, you know, a fair bit of good. I was starting to get really worried about the Napoli thing. So I was like, oh man, now they're just going to show up for one more Champions League game, just get bounced from there too. But I'm increasingly convinced, or confident at least, that they'll get past Napoli. Yeah, I mean, Bayern Munich is, that's going to be a problem. I mean, I'd be hard pressed to sort of predict that they'll, you know, that they'll take out Bayern. I mean, particularly with, I mean, Bayern's attack is, you know, in quite solid shape, and Barcelona's defense is not. And so, I mean, I think it would probably end at the next round. I mean, I'd be very pleasantly surprised if they even, you know, reach the semifinal. And I mean, it's kind of a bummer, but I mean, the thing is, it's all sort of one game situations now. So that's going to help, because, I mean, if we're being honest, Barcelona will probably be underdogs. If they beat Napoli, they'll be underdogs in the quarterfinal and the semifinal. So smaller sample size favors the underdog. I mean, I'm kind of talking myself into platitudes to sort of even talk up the chances of advancing, but yeah, who knows? They can coax out a couple wins, you know, I'd like to think.
Yeah, okay. So I like your positivity. So one of the conversations I wanted to have today, and this will probably take up the majority of our remaining time. And I wanted to talk about Lionel Messi and his future at Barcelona. And I briefly mentioned this last week when I talked with Matt Wiltsy from Managing Madrid about kind of the and I think we've chatted about this too, like kind of the 1-year Messi deals moving forward, how it kind of, you know, resembles LeBron James and his time with Cleveland. When I was talking with Matt about, you know, I was drooling over Zinedine Zidane, and I was thinking, you know, what does, you know, how he's kind of the perfect manager for Real Madrid. And, you know, Pep Guardiola was the stereotypical perfect manager for Barcelona. He fit everything about the club. Mm-hmm. He, you know, he resembled the ideology, like you mentioned earlier, that kind of Barcelona ideology and mindset that we think about when we, you know, when we say FC Barcelona, like what does that mean? Part of me wonders, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, or whether I'm getting too kind of in my own head about this, on whether or not Messi's contract ending, you know, next summer, and, you know, the conversation has been whether or not it's, you know, fake or just kind of rumors that he would even consider leaving. Personally, I think he's actually thinking about it. I think he sees Cristiano Ronaldo moving on from Real Madrid to see continued success. Not the same level of success, right? Like, he hasn't won a Champions League, but he's, you know, somewhat reinvented himself, somewhat doing the same thing. But nevertheless, like, he was able to leave. And, you know, granted, Ronaldo had already left once with Manchester United, whatever. Not entirely apples to apples, but something he can observe. And, like, I do think Messi's actually considering it. I don't think he actually will leave, because I think he has, you know, he has Barcelona, you know, hamstrung. And I guess that's kind of, like, the more I look at this Setien stuff, and the more I was kind of surprised to already see, you know, reportedly Messi turning on him. And it does seem like Messi's desire, rightfully so, to win in the short term, right? Like, while he's still in somewhat of a, you know, 20 goal, 20 assist, you know, post prime, as much as we can say that, as ridiculous of a statement that is, like, as an attacking midfielder, the best in the world at this point, like, do you think he's hamstringing, that's not a word, Barcelona's ability to kind of find that next manager that will lead them into the future, whether that's and part of me feels like they're holding off on hiring Xavi because they just feel like he's going to get fed into the machine at this point. And with this current state of how Barcelona is being run, both from the players' side and from upper management, like it feels like they would just fire Xavi in 18 months too. But I don't know, kind of all those thoughts together. Do you feel like Messi's short-term outlook is hamstringing Barcelona's ability to kind of build for the future?
So I want to sort of tackle this a certain way. I think there was, and I know the dynamic at the teams is entirely different. And I mean, not completely black and white, but you know, they're just different sports, different environments. But so I'm a Laker fan, just a lifelong Los Angeles Lakers fan. And so it was there was conversations like this about, you know, the last 2-3 years of Kobe Bryant's career, which was, you know, they gave him this big sort of, it was essentially a golden parachute, you know, 2-year, $50 million contract. And effectively the last 2 years became sort of the Kobe farewell tour and things like that. And a lot of people were sort of like, just up in arms, kind of talking about it, like, oh my God, the Lakers are wasting money and, you know, things like that. Now, in that instance, I figured that, you know, after sort of 2 decades, 5 championships and all all that had come with that, I figured like a 2-year farewell tour when we weren't going to be that good anyway was, who cares? You know, fine. Messi now is still better than Kobe was in year, 17, 18, you know? And I think on the one hand, yeah, like I think there's a holding pattern until some sort of post-Messi roadmap, I guess, reveals itself. I mean, I think on the flip side, though, like to in any way accelerate sort of the departure of Messi is, I think, one of those things that where the minute fans or anybody, people in charge, whomever, saw him in another shirt the following season, it would immediately feel like just a horrific decision. Because I think there's a couple of things. One, like just on the field, like while playing, Messi still has sort of the most powerful orbit around opposing defenses and is still the best passer and, you know, sort of most gifted dissector of the game and spotter of passing lanes and runs and things like that. And, you know, he's the best in the world and one of the best to ever do it. So that doesn't get replaced easily. I mean, he's still one of the best goal scorers, free kick takers in the world. That doesn't get replaced easily. And then on top of all that, I don't see anything in the administration and sort of the management of the club that leads me to believe that, you know, if the looming shadow of Messi were taken out of the equation, I don't get the impression that these guys are essentially just placating Messi because they're just waiting to unleash their brilliant plan to restore Barcelona to where it ought to be. Like, I don't have that much confidence in anyone who's running the show to kind of in 2 years, you know, move on from Messi and also sort of restore Barcelona to a place where, like, the name Messi doesn't immediately conjure like tears and regret. You know?
Right. Like, I mean, and to be very clear, I'm not in any way advocating that Barcelona should ever.
No, I'm not putting those words right. Enough, but right. I'm saying taking that sort of line of thinking to its to its logical conclusion would be like, hey, you know, if we can only get out from under, I mean, it would be kind of like sorry to dredge up another NBA analogy.
No, it's Jerry Krause, right?
It would be the Last Dance Bulls.
Yeah.
You have Michael Jordan. Sure, he's whatever he was, 34, 35. But like, you still have Michael Jordan, who's pretty much, like, maybe not at the very apex of his powers, but still basically better than almost anyone who's ever played the game before. And, like, your, I don't know, like, delusional self-confidence or this weird desire to effectively, like, just move on from the greatest sort of superstar and icon the game has because you think you can just build it back up again. I mean, the Bulls are a really good analogy.
Yeah, and I guess, like, the one, you know, kind of, and I'm glad you brought the Bulls up because I think that's a good, like, that's the lesson as to why you would never make the decision to get rid of Messi, right? Like, that's the, like, it's not even a conversation. And frankly, I consider it inevitable that Messi will be at Barcelona for the next, you know, 3 to 5 years. And I don't think he's leaving next summer, but I do think he's considering it. I just think he's
I'm sure it's crossed his mind. Like, there's times where you see his face during the game.
Yeah.
Where he's like, oh God, I could be anywhere else right now.
Yeah. But it's like, and you look at the landscape, it's like, there's not really anywhere he could go that would be like close to being better. You could maybe say equal, like Manchester City or something, but it not being better. And
yeah,
so, like, you know, kind of viewing it as inevitable that he's going to be there for the next 3 to 5 years, you know, wielding the power that one like Messi can wield at Barcelona, and I think a power that he is you know, that he is not flexing, but that he's using a little bit more internally than I think we've than we've seen him use ever since he's been at Barcelona. You know, right or wrong, and I think he's kind of learning the sharp edges around having that power and how you deal with that publicly and privately, and, you know, flexing that a little bit. And so I guess, like, the kind of going back to the Bulls comparison, right, is like Messi's Phil Jackson left. And I wonder if him staying, like, if they even risk bringing someone, like, because I think everyone, like, it's like a very easy thing to, like, say that, you know, we hope that Xavi is going to be like Barcelona's version of Zinedine Zidane. Right. And I wonder if that's even possible for that to take place.
The second coming of Pep.
Right. Yeah. Is like, if that transformation could even take place while Messi's still at the club, like if that's even possible for it to happen, because, and, like, I wonder if, like, they're actually scared of, like, burning the bridge with Xavi too soon by bringing him into this, like, this strange, like, vortex of messiness right now. Right.
So there's a couple of things. I think there might be a little bit of that. I think you said it, you know, in your previous question, I think you said it exactly sort of the way that I would think about it. It was like, on the one hand, yeah, I think there's a little bit of sort of concern and trepidation about simply just, like, feeding Xavi into the machine. And because it's just, like, it's a mill at this point. And it churns whoever you throw in, you know, and just churns them up and spits them out. So I think there's that. I've also read stuff, and I, you know, like, there's so much, it's so much kind of political, you know, hearsay and kind of he said, she said and stuff like that. I've read stuff recently that suggests that Xavi is closely aligned with, I believe, someone who's running for the Barca presidency next year. And so there might be hesitation on his part to accept the job from Bartomeu because, I mean, let's be honest, too. I mean, I think the Bartomeu era is just ending sort of in this, you know, with about as much kind of sort of toxicity and sort of animosity as one could imagine. And so I think Xavi's willing to bide his time. And I think there might be a sense of, not so much Messi leaving, but I think there's a sense that, you know, the club, just even the playing squad is on the decline. And almost just biding his time, and, you know, and I have no indication that this is what's going on, but you almost think that, well, you know, these guys are definitely not going in the right direction. If I sort of sit on my hands for another year or two, you know, a little bit more of the decline plays out, none of that goes on my CV, and then I get to come in with the situation worse, and sort of the grading curve is easier. You know what I mean? Not that he wants it to be easier, but it's kind of like, why preside over, you know, the next year or two of what looks like a little bit of an inevitable decline. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. The, Yeah, and honestly, that's just kind of one of what I wanted to chat about with you. I wanted to get your thoughts on that. So before we wrap up, what are you working on? What do you want to work on in the inevitable off season? And like, what's on the horizon for Emil?
So let's see. So you and I were actually speaking about it earlier. I for a publication, I mentioned previously that I've written for The Blizzard. And so they have a sort of a smaller publication that comes out every month. It's called The Squall. And but both are available at the, I believe it's blizzard.co.uk. And so I actually, this is what I was telling you, I'm going to get run out of town on a rail. And I actually wrote some grudging nice words about Sergio Ramos. So that should be out in about a week. I look forward to relocating once again out of Barcelona, you know, once that comes out. But so that's actually something that I've done recently. And, you know, kind of going forward, I've been doing a little bit of sort of kind of day job stuff outside of sports writing stuff. And, you know, just kind of getting back to writing about NBA history. I've kind of found an old Bulls game that I found really fascinating. It's kind of a nothing regular season game that I'm kind of doing some stat work on and writing up. And yeah, just going to write more about Barcelona, more about Messi. And, you know, for the time being, there's the roadmap isn't perfectly defined right now. I'm just kind of picking projects at this point. It's been a bit of a busy last month or so. But yeah, I'm going to take the next few days and have a little bit more specific going forward.
Nice. That sounds good. So everyone can check out Emil's work at Hardwood Hype on Twitter. We will share the link to that in the post for this. Hope you all enjoyed listening. If you want to find Emil and I will be, you know, completely out of this planet after my podcast with Managing Madrid last week. And Emil will be following me once his piece on Sergio Ramos posts. So hope you enjoyed your time with us. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and I will talk to you next time.